Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Stop punishing yourself with bland, chalky protein shakes and fuel your fitness with the best protein in the game at GNC. We've got the hottest brands and flavors that legit taste like cookies, your favorite cereal, indulgent desserts, and more. It's on at GNC.
Hey, everybody, it's Joel Hoekstra from Whitesnake, and you're listening to the Growing Up Rock podcast with your hosts, Stephen Michael and Sonny Hollywood Pooney. Now crank it up.
Thinking about the good times, baby. Remembering the bad. Memories of broken dreams only make me sad.
What's up, people? As we do so often on this show, while my partner in crime, Hollywood, is out roasting marshmallows with Jeff Scott Soto or having a pool party over there at Richie Kotzen's house, I have the pleasure of bringing back to the Growing Up Rock podcast Whitesnake guitarist Joel Hoekstra. Joel's an amazing player who splits his time playing with Whitesnake, Cher, and Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And that's just when he's not playing with other artists like Michael Sweet or doing the Bloody Mary Hangover morning gig on the Monsters of Rock cruise every February. And that's a lot of fun, I gotta tell you. As somebody who took part in that last year, I enjoy that feature on the Monsters of Rock cruise. Whitesnake just recently released their 13th studio album called Flesh and Blood, the first album of original material since Forevermore in 2011, and the first original album to feature our friend, Mr. Joel Hoekstra. Please welcome back to the Growing Up Rock podcast, one of the hardest working axe slingers in rock and roll today, Mr. Joel Hoekstra. What up, Joel?
What's happening? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So you and I were just talking before we started recording here. You just finished up the U.S. run with Whitesnake, and now you're back out with Cher till the end of this month, and then it's back to Europe and do another leg with Whitesnake, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So, just doing a run with Cher here in Canada. Had a great run in the U.S. with Whitesnake, and then Whitesnake in Europe is up next, and then a residency in Vegas with Cher kind of on the heels of that. So, yeah, busy, busy.
Yeah, and we're here today to talk about the killer new Whitesnake album, Flesh and Blood. I've had a chance to spend some time with this record now. I've had a chance to see the band live twice on this tour so far.
Awesome. Well, thank you, and I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, it's been good so far. I've enjoyed everything. Flesh and Blood is the 13th studio album released in May of 2019, so this year, this month, as we're recording this. You co-wrote 6 tunes, I think, and Reb co-wrote 5. Is that correct?
I think on the basic, yes, and then on the deluxe, I think add a song for each of us. So I think I technically co-wrote 7 songs if you get the deluxe edition, which I recommend, actually, because the bonus tracks are good tunes.
Yeah, I've got the deluxe version. I do want to talk to you about one of those tunes on that deluxe version because I like it quite a bit and wanted to get the story on that. So the last album for Whitesnake of original material was Forevermore back in 2011. You came into the band around 2015 when the band did Purple. Is that right?
I joined in 2014 for the recording of the Purple album. Yeah. So I think somewhere in spring of 2014, and then we were recording that. And then by the time we headed out, it was 2015 on the Purple tour.
So technically, this is the first original album with both you and Reb kind of contributing, right?
I view the Purple album like we contributed a lot in terms of creativity and reimagining the songs, but certainly Flesh and Blood is the next step in terms of contribution. Yeah, especially seeing as along the way, David brought me in as co-producer.
Yeah, so that was my next question. And yeah, I was referring to the original material, which Purple, of course, is the revisiting of the Deep Purple stuff. But Joel, this is the third album on Frontiers Records. Who produced this record? Did you just say that you were co-producing on this record?
Yeah, so David's, of course, the executive producer. And then I believe it was produced by Michael McIntyre, Reb Beach, and myself.
That's cool. And you guys, you recorded it up at David's place in Tahoe, is that right?
No, actually, there's a studio house, and that's actually in neighboring Reno. So that's where we kind of, it's really cool. It's we basically stay there when we're out there. And so it's really nice. You wake up and you're already there. David usually comes down from the house and stays there too. So you're kind of hanging out with David solid the whole time. And it's a good time.
That's great. So can you take us through the recording process? Were you guys ever in the same room while recording the record? I'm guessing with everyone's having such busy schedules, you may have all come in at different times to record your parts.
Yeah, not the entire band. So the way it worked is David would have myself out for a writing session or Reb out for a writing session. And then there was one period where it was both of us. And it was our job during that stretch to demo the songs, which we did basically with just MIDI drums in Pro Tools, like essentially a drum machine. And one of us would play bass. And so we'd hash out the form of the song, get it approved by David, and then all those demos went to the band. And so when everybody came in to record their parts, they came in knowing it. We're able to study it at home. So Tommy, of course, the way it usually works with a band is the drums go down first and then everybody records to the drums. So yeah, this was very much just like that. It just kind of went like Tommy and I think Reb actually went on next. And I think he was about halfway done when I came in to do mine. And then Reb at the end after me. And then I think, you know, Michele. But everybody, David likes to have everybody in there, so he's hands-on and able to work with us creatively.
Yeah, now, I assume the touring band are all the same players that are on the record, correct?
Yeah, yeah, the touring lineup is the same as the studio lineup.
That's great. So I think maybe it'd be a good idea, if you want, let's go through the record and just talk about the tracks. Tell us which ones you wrote and if you've got any stories attached to them, let's discuss.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, so the album opens up with Good to See You Again. For me, I love this song. It sounds like Whitesnake, but it sounds different for me for some reason. Like, I don't know, just a different side to it. Who's playing the slide guitar? Is that you?
It's actually both. So I'm playing like the riff in the chorus is a slide riff that I'm playing. And then Reb is kind of playing the more AC/DC-ish sounding riff at the top of the song. Reb is playing the fake slide with his Floyd Rose. So it's basically Reb and myself.
Yeah, it's a great song. There's a lot of slide playing on this record. Who wrote Good to See You Again?
So I wrote the riffs to that, and David wrote the vocals. Reb kind of tweaked the riff, basically. He basically suggested that as an alternate in there when we were laying it down and tracking it. So I think technically it's written by all three of us.
Sure. Now, when David's writing, is he bringing vocal melodies and lyrics to it? He doesn't play, right?
No, David plays guitar. He doesn't track like on the album.
Sure.
But he plays guitar well enough to write riffs and all the song ideas.
Okay.
Most of the stuff was done like with him having an idea. And some of the stuff was Reb or myself having an idea. So David handles all the lyrics and vocal melodies on the Whitesnake stuff. That's just like a given. So it's basically our job to give him great beds to sing over.
That makes sense. That makes total sense. And it's nice when a singer can at least play a riff on a guitar rather than probably just humming it to you.
Absolutely. No, it helps a ton that he plays guitar at the level he does.
Yeah. So then we go into Gonna Be All Right. I like this song pretty good. There's more slide in the solo section of this song. Whose composition is this?
So that is David and myself. And that was an idea that David set out to in his mind for a Coverdale Page follow-up. So he had written that main riff, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, with Jimmy Page in mind. Cool to eventually down the road have that idea, and he said this was going to be for Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
So he had to downgrade significantly, but he finished it with me.
When you guys are hanging out, does he share a lot of stories with you guys? Does he get into some of those stories?
Yeah, here and there. Yeah. And it's really cool when he does, because for the most part, David likes to just be one of the guys and laugh and hang out and have a good time. And then every once in a while, he'll slip into something like that where he's talking about working with Jimmy or working with Richie Blackmore. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. you're a total legend.
Yeah, right. It's a piece of rock and roll history. I always picture David just because of the way he comes off in interviews and just how he looks in the public eye. I always kind of picture David as walking around with like a chalice and a smoking jacket on for some reason.
I think he's a lot more about laughs than anybody realizes. I think if you follow him on Twitter, you kind of get that.
Yeah.
You see David, he just loves to laugh and enjoy life. And we have a good time together.
Yeah, 100% get that. Then we get into the first single from the record and the first video, Shut Up and Kiss Me. I love this song. Tell me about the video. Did you guys really play a club for this shoot, or was it just a soundstage?
It was just basically built into the studio house I was talking about. So okay. They built like a soundstage so we could just kind of hang and not have pressure on us timing-wise. And then it was really David's. We had one take where it was basically just the band playing it and all with local friends and stuff invited to come hang. And then David had the vision of the Jaguar and all the cutaway footage, and that eventually became the video that everybody saw. So if you get the deluxe edition, I think there's also a DVD where you see the video where it's just the band playing it. So without the cutaway footage as well. So there's two different versions of the video.
Very cool. What was the situation with this song? Who ended up writing this one?
That's all Reb's riffs, and David wrote the lyrics and melodies and the hook and everything. So, yeah, that one I didn't have much to do with. I suggested the whatever you want, whatever you need, baby, the responses. That actually kind of came from me, but not enough to be considered a co-write.
Right. Came out really well. Hey You is next, and I think you guys may have played this one live when I saw you, but I thought it went over really well with the gang chorus and stuff. What's up with this tune?
Yeah, it was in the set for the US, and Reb had that collection of riffs, and it was ordered the other way around. The chorus riff was the verse riff at the time, and he was like, I don't know if this is gonna make it. And I said, well, that should be a chorus riff. And then he said, well, what would you sing? And I kind of, you know, showed him the concept of a gang vocal being in those holes, and he liked that. It kind of took off from there in terms of momentum, us working on it. And yeah, there you go, man. Yeah. And then I think I wrote the bridge riff, which is kind of like an ethereal, I guess, a different vibe. It just kind of, and then it kind of convinced David to do some talking over it and do that sexy Coverdale voice over it. So.
Do you end up having to pitch David some of this stuff and really sell him on some of your thoughts and ideas, or is he fairly easy to convince?
He's just usually knows exactly yes or no, which is great. He's really direct and really quick, and it's better that way. It's great when everybody's totally honest, and when we've been working together long enough that we can just be totally honest and laugh about it. If there's something, an idea I have that he doesn't like, I don't take offense. Nobody's ever going to bat 1,000 in those scenarios. So it's all about, you know, making the team work, making the band work, and having fun in the process.
Yeah, he has his vision, and I'm sure if you approach it in that way, it's a lot less stressful.
It's really not stressful. It's actually just about being mentally in tune with David, with all of this stuff, with writing and record, like guitar part ideas, and we're on the same page almost all the time. You know, it really, I don't want to make it sound like he's shooting down ideas left and right, because that doesn't happen. And I think if he was going through that, it would be too laborious for him. We're on the same page, I'd say 98% of the time.
That's a great working relationship.
Yeah, totally.
Always and Forever. So for me, this song was probably the first one on the record that actually sounded to me like maybe it belonged or came from an older Whitesnake period of time. I think that this one sounded more old Whitesnake than anything before it. This has a huge Thin Lizzy vibe to it, almost the same as Guilty of Love from Slide It In. What can you tell me about this tune? Because I love it.
That one's all David. He had the chords, and I tried to dress up the chords into a riff a little bit more that I guess would give it that Whitesnake vibe. But outside of that, it's David's writing. And honestly, I think it's David has a lot of influences, and I think that kind of taps a little bit into it. He's talked in the past about how Whitesnake is influenced by Motown songs. And I think if you listen to just the chorus, if you slowed it down and gave it like a Motown groove, Always and Forever can almost be a Motown song, like in terms of the melody and chord changes.
Sure, I see that. I think the twin guitar thing at the beginning sort of Thin Lizzy, but I also think the way that David delivers some of the verses is a little bit reminiscent of Phil Lynott. That's just me. That's what I get out of it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the twin guitar thing, there's been a lot of comparisons with that song to that. Yeah, sure. It's all, like I said, it's all David's song. So
whose solo is that?
That's mine.
That's a blazing solo. I got notes written down for each song, and my note simply says blazing solo.
Oh, thanks so much, man.
Then we get to the first ballad on the record, When I Think of You, Color Me Blue. This to me reminds me of something that maybe could have come on 87. What's the story with this tune?
Yeah, once again, that's really David's song, the opening theme and everything. And then I just tried to go with like a secondary theme for the solo and not think so, I guess, shred or technical. I wanted to stay hooky, and I'll just try to think of it like that Les Paul U-tone, like Clapton, Wonderful Tonight kind of thing. And I like the solo for the hook element that I have in the middle on that one. But the song is all David's.
Okay, cool. So we talked a little bit about it previously, but what was the writing process for you guys on this record, since both you and Reb really had not written a bunch with David before this record as far as original material goes? How did you guys share ideas and thoughts and come together?
They were collected at various times. So with me, I was out to work with David on what became Unzipped. He was wanting me to kind of rework some of the hits with acoustic, and then talked about maybe wanting to put some new stuff on. And he showed me the basic idea for After All. And he said, where would you go with that? And that was the first thing we ended up writing together, oddly enough. So I wrote a bridge to it or whatever in a little instrumental section, and those little intro and outro and all that stuff. And so That was, oddly enough, the first thing I wrote with David. And then I think while we were playing acoustic so much out there, it was some moment where we got a little bored with that and just plugged in my Les Paul and wrote the riffs to Trouble Is Your Middle Name. And he was like, oh, let's lay that down. And that was before we knew we were doing an album or anything. We were doing that just for fun. So that's an example of like where two of them came from on a trip out. And then there were other ideas that Dave, like a lot of my stuff with David came from him giving me, like saying, where would you go with this? I have this idea. And I would finish it with him. And really kind of the same with Reb. I think Reb had a couple where he wrote the riffs all the way through. But a lot of the stuff came with David saying to either both of us or one of us, where would you go with this? Yeah. and then us just kind of, yeah, finding common ground with him. And that all happens kind of around his desk at the studio house. So more like up in the living room, and you just kind of hang out and hash out the form of songs real quick. And then you go into the studio area and demo it up.
Okay. That's fair enough. It's interesting to hear that kind of thing. It's just an interesting way to approach it. And it seems very organic and very easy that way.
Yeah. Nowadays, I think people don't necessarily demo up songs anymore. They just kind of say, all right, okay, all right, so we'll do that. Yeah, let's record it. And it still is nice to have the demos and really kind of listen to it without guitars in your hands to see how stuff hits you, I think, before you actually record it as a band. Or have stuff that you played on the demo version that you say, yeah, I liked what I did on that, even though there was no pressure on at the time. And
yeah, I would agree. I'm going to skip around a little bit. We talked a little bit already about Trouble Is Your Middle Name. Flesh and Blood, I love the dual harmony slides in the solo section. Is that one person playing it, or are you guys actually doing kind of a harmony slide section there?
I think we each played. Yeah, it's hard for me to remember, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because that one's not in the set, so probably you haven't heard or played that tune since you recorded it, I'm guessing.
Well, no, I've definitely listened to it a lot. As you go, I was part of, you know, taking mix notes and things like that and sending it in to David and to Chris Collier. But yeah, in terms of who tracked exactly what parts, sometimes I'm a little a little hazy on, but I think we probably both played the part.
Well, hey, Joel, if it's any consolation to you, once we record a podcast and I edit this podcast and put it out there to the world, I don't listen to it again because I'm so sick of hearing it after I edit it all that it's done. So people, you know, I'll get emails or I'll get text or I'll get messages from people that go, hey, what were you thinking about A, B, or C? And I'm like, I don't remember that. I'm 50 episodes past that by now, you know? So
that's funny.
I completely understand what you're saying, because I'm guessing that as a musician, once you record it and if you play it a thousand times, then that's kind of like, okay, I'm done with it. Next.
Well, it's almost too, just by the when stuff gets released, there's been a window of time since you actually tracked it, since you actually laid it down. Yeah. Sure. And that obviously blurs some things, but
sure.
But yeah.
Heart of Stone. This one has somewhat of a little bit darker feel to it, but I love the killer outro solo. I don't know if that's you or whether that's Reb, but a really good outro solo on this song.
Let me pull up. let me pull it up to actually tell you on that. I think the other day I sent something out to somebody about the solo notes. Here we go, solo credits and Heart of Stone. So I did the outro solo. Yes, it's my outro solo.
Good job, my friend. You know,
yeah, I did the main solo and the outro solo on it. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I listened to it. Not first of all, I think both you and Reb are ridiculous players, so it doesn't really. It doesn't matter who I'm talking about.
No, it doesn't. I'm kidding. I'd be just as happy if Reb played it, but it's.
but as a team, you guys did an amazing job on this record, and I want that to come across in this interview as we try to push this record out there to people that maybe haven't heard this record yet. They need to, as the next song says, get up off their asses and go check it out. So this song moves, man. There's a dual guitar solo in this song, Get Up, right?
Yeah, there's like at the end, there's a trade, and then we kind of come together on a tapping thing that we worked on together. Just kind of a lot of notes. We're paid by the note in that little part.
It's been the night together, baby, you and me. We'll set the night on fire, just you wait and see.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. After all.
So we talked about that earlier. That's the one that David had the basic idea for, with the finger picking idea and everything. Kind of Beatlesy, oddly enough. But I didn't think it would make Flesh and Blood, just because it's an acoustic song and it's mellow. But everybody kind of voted it on. David really liked it. He wanted it on the album. And so, of course, that was great news for me.
Yeah, so here's my views on this song, because I'm absolutely not a ballad guy or a slow guy. I like you to crank your amps on 10 and stick my head in front of it, okay? That's where I come from. But after all, I envision After All as being a song that will be played at weddings. I mean, this is a really pretty song. And, you know, personally, I'm married. I got a wife. I can identify with this song and share this song with her. And it's just, you know, it's a great song. I love it.
Oh, thanks so much, man. Yeah, I mean, really, most of the credit goes to David with that. He had the foundation of the guitar idea, and of course, he wrote the melody and the lyrics. So even though I helped with it, it's really, most of it has to do with David.
Yeah, but you see where I'm going with the wedding song thing, right? You can totally hear that.
I do. The song itself is just, it's a very pretty song and very delicate, and that's almost what makes it. David at the time said it was new territory for Whitesnake on an album. So I haven't really read that in any of the reviews or heard anybody saying that, but just the nature of it being, I guess, like a, you know, a finger style Beatles kind of tune, Beatles-ish kind of song.
Yep.
He considered that to be new territory.
Fair enough. And then the last of the regular album before you kick into deluxe version, but Sands of Time, which for me is a very Zeppelin vibe, very Cashmere feeling. What's the story on this tune?
Yeah, that's Reb's opus, man. Reb came in with that one and had all the music written, and David wrote the lyrics and melodies. So that's a great, I'm really glad that made it on there. There's a lot of real straightforward stuff on Flesh and Blood, which is by design, but I was glad that we were able to get a little bit more of a progressive type of tune on there too, with various sections. And I think that added a touch of class to the album.
Yeah, I can totally hear it on a Whitesnake album. It seems right up David's alley. So I'm guessing maybe it was a fairly easy sale for Dave. And yeah, it's a cool tune. It's opus was a good word.
I think it wasn't. I think Reb had to present various versions before David went ahead and said, okay.
Okay.
So yeah, it wasn't an easy sell.
Who can figure out what Mr. Coverdale is thinking? So now the deluxe edition of the record, I just really want to talk about one song in general, which is If I Can't Have You.
If I can't have you.
Whose tune is that, and what's the story behind that song?
So David had the basic, the dun dun ba dun dun, the If I Can't Have You.
Yeah.
Basically the, I don't know what you'd compare that to. Almost like a Zeppelin-y kind of shuffle or something. But it's a blues, basically.
Sure.
Bluesy kind of riff. And then out of nowhere, we kind of fell across that, the concept of that chorus becoming a little bit, it needed to go somewhere else. If it stayed in that same place, it just wasn't working. So we ended up kind of, I guess, almost going to more of a Beatles-ish kind of place for the chorus. And David had just brilliant idea of the band singing the hook and him doing the responses. And so, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I like the a cappella intro, and to me, for some reason, David's vocals on this song, this particular song, sound like they're a little bit older, meaning that he recorded them at a younger age. Not real young, I'm not talking about that, but it just sounds different because for me, when I listen to this record as a whole, he's singing sort of in a little bit lower register than what I normally remember him singing at. And that's probably just normal because the guy's older.
Well, I think he's always keeping an eye on live performance too, and not killing himself. I think David did a fantastic job with singing like David Coverdale nowadays on this record, and I think his vocals came across great on the whole album.
Yeah, 100% agree, for sure. So that's really the record. Like I said, once again, great job with the record. It sounds like it was a fairly easy process for you. Any stories you want to share as a whole for the recording of this record?
It's always just like putting just something you love out into the world. You put a lot of work into it and heart and soul, and you hope for the best. So you try and do your best for the Whitesnake fan base and for your bandmates and for yourself, and just hope that people dig it in general. So we're all exceedingly happy right now at the reception. It seems like people really, really, really like the album. It's being really well received, and that's very exciting.
That's fantastic. So before we let you go, let's find out about a couple things. One, will I see you again in February on Monsters of Rock 10?
I believe that is the plan. Okay. So yeah, I should be there. Larry and I just kind of usually have a running agreement that I'm going to be doing my hangover set. That's kind of part of the cruise at this point. It's a tradition. So
I agree. The Bloody Mary hangover. It was my first time partaking in the Bloody Mary hangover this year, technically, and we'll be back next year. So that was good.
You really can't beat free Bloody Marys from me. I mean, come on now. It doesn't even matter what the music is, right? If I'm giving away free booze up there, come on.
Technically, I'm not a big booze hound. I'm more of a wine drinker, but I enjoy just the morning acoustic. And for those that don't know what we're talking about, that haven't been on Monsters of Rock, Joel plays an acoustic set and he invites a bunch of friends up from different bands, etc. And he gives away a bunch of free shit. I think he was giving away $20 bills at one point this past time.
Thank you for noticing that. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's just turned into a fun little, I guess, casual set for me. And it's probably one of the only gigs where I sing every year. I sing a few tunes, cover songs and stuff like that for fun. And so, yeah, it's great fun. And I love being on that cruise. I think that's just the best rock cruise running, in my opinion. So always great to be a part of it.
It is, and Reb's going to be on this one with Winger, so who knows, we might get Reb and Joel to do a Whitesnake tune or something like that. You never know.
You never know. Yeah, you never know.
That's right. But here's the important thing, and I know that this has been weighing very heavy on your mind, and so I'll ask because I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that want to know, which is, have you been practicing your jump shot, my friend?
So you've been on my social media, I guess. Huh?
Well, I've been on your social media, but like I said, I was also on the cruise. I don't know where you placed in the competition, but you took part in the competition that they have on the Monsters of Rock cruise, the shootout with the various rock stars. Is that right?
Well, that was – so what happened is the year before this past one, I played some cruisers that were up there playing basketball. And then I said to Larry, I said, next year we should have a thing where people can sign up to play me one-on-one. And he was like, don't threaten me with a good time. He's like, that sounds like an awesome idea. So, and then what happened is some of the other rockers coming on board heard about it. They wanted in. So Richie Kotzen heard, and he was like, hey, I love to be a part of that. So, who else, Jeff Scott Soto and Gary Sharon. And so we ended up making it a 3-on-3 thing where three cruisers could basically play against three rockers. So play a game of 3-on-3, and the rockers won this year. But I think it's going to be hopefully turn into an annual tradition, just like the hangover jam. But I'll tell you, man, it was great because it got myself up there every day trying to you know, you don't want to embarrass yourself. So I'm up there practicing my shot every day. And Richie was up there too. And so Richie and I got to play one-on-one. And that's a great way for us musicians to get to hang too, because we're not sitting there talking music, or I'm not asking him a million questions about his guitar playing or his career. It was just kind of two guys having fun playing basketball. So that was, for me, that was the highlight of the cruise, actually. And just getting to see all those guys in a totally different light and hang and have fun. And I feel like the cruisers feel that way too, because it's like, hey, man, we're playing basketball against, you know, Gary Cherone and
yeah, ridiculous, right?
And for everybody.
Well, and let me just tell the people out there listening, if they have any visions of grandeur, that they're going to come in and just, you know, run away with a ball game. First of all, those of you that have never met Joel's like 7'1" or something. I don't know, Joel. How tall are you?
I'm totally not 7'1". You're like six. I'm between 6'2" and 6'3". I'm like 6'2.5".
You're at least 6'3", because I'm 6'1", and I think we took a photo, and you're at least a head above me. So Joel looks like a basketball player, and I saw him hitting those jump shots on his social media, and it's one after the other. So yeah, you got game, Joel.
Not really. I think in my younger years, back when I lived in the suburbs in Chicago, I used to teach a lot of lessons. So I would teach 70 students a week, and I did 6 days a week, basically. And almost every day when I'd get done teaching, I'd go up to the Y, which wasn't far from there, and play. And in that little window of time, I was pretty good.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I'm just a guy who's too old to be playing basketball out there who's able to knock down some shots, but that's about it.
That's awesome. Well, that's a good time. How about the new Michael Sweet record? I think you played something on that, didn't you?
Yeah, I actually co-wrote two songs on it with him. So same type of deal where you write the beds. Like, I wrote the riffs, and then Michael wrote the lyrics and melodies, but obviously I played guitar on those two songs. I think the idea is he wanted an album with a bunch of guitar players, where he did that with a bunch of us. So, mm-hmm. You know, we keep talking about the idea of doing an album together, and we just, the schedule and the business just hasn't come together on that, but hopefully one day it does. I like Michael a lot. He's a great guy and would love to work with him.
Yeah. Well, he's another one that'll be on the boat that you guys can get some networking done while he's on the boat, and maybe he sits in on a song or two as well with you.
Oh, right on. Excellent.
So that's it then. What's next for you? First of all, where can people find all they want to know about Joel Hoekstra?
So I still have a website, amazingly enough.
that's good.
I have a difficult name though, so I'll spell it for everybody. Joel, J-O-E-L, and Hoekstra, H-O-E-K. STRA.com, JoelHoekstra.com. And you can literally link to any of my social media stuff just straight from there. And I'm usually pretty good about getting back to everybody. So much appreciated any level of doing out there. If you're streaming or buying or coming to the concerts, totally appreciate it. And the opportunity to live my dream.
Yeah, and don't go up to the front of the stage at the concert. Joel's not throwing out $20 bills at his concerts, so just FYI. You got to come on.
No, that's a one time. That's what makes the Hangover Jam special, man, the Bloody Mary. You only get the free shit there.
Yeah, and we'll link to all your website and everything in our show notes. And then, you got TSO coming up in October, November, December?
Yeah, the tour itself is usually mid-November through December, yes.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you didn't make it through Duluth, Georgia last time. We got the West Coast touring version of TSO for some reason. So Jeff Scott Soto was in my backyard, but you weren't last year. All right, Joel. Well, I appreciate you coming on and shooting the shit with us about this record. Great job once again. And stay safe out on the road. We'll see you at the Monsters of Rock next year.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.
Get ready to shuffle, rattle, and roll. Play us out, boys. Please make sure you subscribe to our podcast, Growing Up Rock, and leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a like and leave us a comment on Facebook at Growing Up Rock.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.